Hello and welcome to the Vote Plan Podcast. This is Marquise, your host. Today we have a special episode with Mr. Jevin Hodge. Jevin is running for a county supervisor seat in Maricopa County, Arizona. And we are so excited to have this talented, brilliant, beautiful young man on the pod. Say hello to America, Jevin.
Thank you so much for having me on the pod.
Thank you. Now, what's beautiful in your world?
Any day I'm above ground, I'm too blessed to be stressed. And so, you know, we got a lot going on in this world. There's so much happening right now, you know, and to be blessed with the opportunity to run for office, right, especially in such trying times, especially in such a historic moment in our republic's history, you know, I have to say that, you know, I can't tell you, you know, words don't even describe how fortunate and how bright and beautiful things are in my world right now.
Now, let me ask you. In this world where everyone is so cynical, and not everyone, I shouldn't say that, where so many people are so cynical, what urged you to answer the call to actually step in and do public service and run for office?
That's a great question. I deeply appreciate you asking me. If you don't mind, let me tell you a little bit about me, if that's okay. So I'm an Arizona native. I love everything about Arizona, the great state 48. I took my first breath in the city of Tempe, just down the street from Arizona State University. Went to school here, grew up here, but I went off to Washington, D.C. I lived in D.C. for years. I had the opportunity. I thought I was going to Washington, D.C. to get an education. I end up learning about life and everything else that goes along with that. I did a number of different things while I was in D.C. I served as a national spokesperson for a national campaign, started a millennial think tank, worked at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and everything in between while getting education and others. And my job, my professional day job as a social impact consultant is still based out of Washington, D.C. And so when you talk about that calling, right, I think about service. Right. I think about service and I think about your commitment. I serve as the proud president of the Booker T. Washington Child Development Center, the longest running Head Start in the state of Arizona, one of the longest running in the country. When there's a nexus of when, you know, your community is asking you, when you see the opportunity and when you know in your heart of hearts that it is time to step up because leadership has failed the people. And that's what's happened here. Right, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors is the most important and impactful position that most people have never heard of. Maricopa County is the fourth largest county in the country, 4.5 million people, and five people govern this county. And they manage a budget of $3.05 billion, that billion with the B, dollars, handling virtually every issue under the sun, from environmental protections to early childhood education, public works and public parks to corrections and public safety. Flood control to infrastructure and zoning and development. I mean, you name it, it happens through this governing body. And so when I saw that, you know, this is an opportunity for a vibrant, diverse leader to step up to the plate. And when my community summoned, me and asked me to run, and we saw that there was an opportunity, we couldn't help but do it. And last but not least, you know, when mama says do something, that means do it. My mother is the proud president of the book of Tempe Union High School District. She's the first black woman elected in the city of Tempe. She represents about 300,000 people in Maricopa County, Phoenix area. And she learned about this opportunity. She said, this is the best fit for you. And you know, she knew at that moment. And it was all downhill from there.
Wow. Now, it's amazing that this is kind of a family affair, that you've that your mom is the one that brought you into this, and you've had such an amazing opportunity to have that as a blueprint.
I learned from the best. I learned from the best. When I was prior to where I'm at now, I served as a vice chairman of the state Democratic Party in Arizona, where I was the youngest statewide black Democratic official in the country. And so, you know, I got to carry the torch and represent Democrats across the board in the entire state, around the country, around the world. But the most coolest thing I have to tell you was serving at the same time as my mother, you know, and my mother is a living legend, a historic figure in her own right, but just being in the same spaces as a leader, right, with leaders that I look up to tremendously, you know.
Usually a couple of things have happened when there are the children of elected officials. Some of them kind of get crushed in that shadow. You know what I mean? No. Where that kid just, it's almost like the Simba Mufasa thing where Mufasa is walking around and Mufasa don't know how to break that bark down enough so Simba just don't feel crushed under that weight of oppression expectation. But it seems like having your mom in this role, she's been like this guiding force and this light to lift you up.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, I couldn't have a bigger cheerleader. I couldn't have somebody who is a stronger advocate in my corner. I mean, and the thing is that the beautiful part about it is that we complement each other. I was running a bond campaign for the school district in 2013 when she first decided to run. And the reason why she decided to run is because we recruited her to run. And so it was one of those things where, you know, it's just been that perfect combination of you know, where love and unity, you know, unites to create something that is just much greater. You know, I look up to her. I learn so much from her. But at the same time, she's there not only to teach me, but to push me, right? And be that advocate for me as well. Mm. And, you know, it's she, you know, I couldn't have a better person that I look up to in this moment in time doing this at the same time.
What's beautiful is looking at your entire life path has been this work of service. A lot of times what happens, especially with a young Black man, we get some education, is like, it's time to go and make the money because there aren't that many of us making the money. What was it that got you to say, no, this is what's right, over the other thing where you could say, you know, you can make a whole bunch of money, you'd be able to donate, you'd still be able to make a heck of a difference. What was it that put you on this path?
You know, so it's a few different things. I'm gonna start with my mother, right? Mm-hmm. She's always been there. You know, my mother raised my brother and I by herself, and I couldn't have a better upbringing, right? A better experience. I can count on one hand how many times she's ever missed anything in my life, right? So she's always been there. But time and time again, I served as a youth programs director at the Boys and Girls Club at one point. I ran a nonprofit that was working to engage millennials. I taught a class that was called SAIL to inner city high school kids in Washington, D.C. And it was an acronym for Students Adventuring and Leadership. It was basically virtually everything that you didn't learn in the classroom. How to tie a tie, how to talk to the police, how to put on a condom, right? Mm. And we had those conversations from a place of love and compassion. And I keep coming back to this. And I ask myself this all the time. And I think the answer is, right? And it's bound to change. But I strive to be the mentor that I never had. Mm. I strive to be that role model that wasn't there. And so, you know, yes, I could go out and make money. I'm very confident of that. Mm-hmm. But I think about the impact that my presence, right? I remember there's one memory that I often think about. And I remember I was teaching this class, that SAIL class, and I couldn't tell you what the lesson was about, right? But that day I told my kids, and I had, at the time, it was a class of 22 students. I had three girls, and the rest were all gentlemen. And I remember telling them that I loved them. Mm. And that moment, right, mm-hmm. was like, it was earth-shattering. It was like I was taking a chisel and right, and I was just breaking through a hard shell, because at that moment I saw on the look of some of those gentlemen's faces in that class that they've never heard that from somebody that looked like them. Mm. They never heard that from a male, you know. And so when I think about, you know, that service, even back to Booker T. Washington, the Child Development Center that I'm the president of, the populations that I serve, we're 99.9% Black and Latino, mm-hmm. right? And so I get to, when we're in session, you know, I get to see 3-4-year-olds that are, you know, their moms are dropping them off. Mm. You know, their grandmas are dropping them off. Their aunties are dropping them off. And when I'm there, you know, giving them their hugs is when they start the day, and, you know, or walking into the classroom, because I'm a very active hands-on board president. Walking into the classrooms, I'm reminded of that, you know, that feeling of I'm committing to something that is much greater than anything that I could ever imagine, mm-hmm. right? When I'm elected, well, knock on wood, when I'm elected, right, I'm not just going to be a name on the wall, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be a voice for the voiceless. is going to be, you know, it's going to bring into the fold the people who have been marginalized and disenfranchised and victimized for hundreds of years, right? When I see my signs on the street, it doesn't say Jevin Hodge. It says the people, you know, it says the community. And so, you know, when you ask me that, you know, it's like I strive every single day to be that person, right, that is going to just be there.
Mm-hmm. Like there's, it's powerful because something that I took away combining some things you put in the answer from before and this answer, the presence of wanting to be there and that care and giving love in certain ways. When you were describing your mom, a single mom, single moms, they are challenged because sometimes they have to act as both halves of the parent. I was raised by a single mom. And by
a superwoman.
And raised a lot of times by my grandmother. So, you know, sometimes we had, there was a period of time where the 80s kind of took away a whole entire generation of Black parents that stunted a whole generation of folks that are now becoming parents. And so what I heard was the fact that you could count on your hand the number of things that she missed of yours, even as a single parent, to have that kind of commitment and dedication to say the job is less important than the child, making sure to be there for them so that they learn this sort of commitment. And it sounds like that's the sort of commitment that you're going to bring to office because it's what you've brought to the places you've served.
That's exactly right. You know, and I know we're making this, we should just call this the Burdetta Hodge podcast, right? Because, you know, that woman is just so influential, right? And when I talk about, you know, being able to say she missed five, you know, just a handful of things in my life, we didn't have a car until I was a sophomore in high school.
Mm.
Right? And so, and then the Phoenix Metro, you know, public transit system is horrible. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about, you know, things on the campaign trail, like investing in public transportation, it's from real life experience, right? And when I talk about, you know, air conditioning and those type of things, it's from public real life experience. And, bringing that back home, Ms. Hodge did all of this, right, despite her obstacles. Mm-hmm. You know, she made it work with nothing. You know, we always had food on the table, right? We always had a place to live. We didn't always have everything. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother always made it feel as if we had everything.
Wow. Your mom is a superwoman. She like literally, because I've heard, I went to Northwestern and a friend of mine is from Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And he told us the tales of, everybody has a car. You have to have a car in Phoenix. But it's you didn't, and she made it work.
Yeah.
Wow. I have this glow in my chest right now, and it's not just from the Obama on my shirt, from hearing about the amazingness of your mom.
You know, I miss her husband, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me be clear. So if you were elected to office, you're going to be making, and, you know, when you're elected to office, well, we like to think future tense.
That's right.
And once you get there, you're going to be making decisions that have to build out to the next decade. What is the future that you want to build for the next generation that you see coming down the line that maybe not everybody's thinking about that you're like, no, this needs to be on top of the list?
Yeah, you know, and it's investing in our middle class, right? It's there. We get so caught up in the one line, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. No, sometimes you just don't have boots. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have boots, so you don't have the straps to pull yourself up by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want, when I talk about that future, very metaphorically, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to look back and say, I provided those boots.
Mm.
You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We need to have the infrastructure in place that is going to grow a generation of people so we can have more people of color, right, in home ownership so that they can have generational wealth, that is developing for their lineages, right? Not just quick cash, but for their lineages, right? That we're investing in small and local businesses, right? So that we can have that young girl that is looking up to her mother or her father that is running a business, right? Speaking English and Spanish, right? To, you know, their shop owners or whatever it may be. And it's the role of the government to do so, right? And that starts by, you know, investing in our education. That starts by, I talk about early childhood education, right? Like it starts by leveling the playing field so that every child has the opportunity to get that education. We know this, we've seen the stats. When a kid is in preschool, right, or Head Start, they are tremendously better, right, performing, higher performing when they get into the classroom. What can we do to level that playing field? And it's the county's role to step up, right? And it's not their job to take on the burden, it's their job to step up and play that role and facilitate those multi-governmental partnerships, to work with our community colleges, to live up to the Arizona Constitution, to make our higher education as free or as close to free as possible, right? It's investing in those infrastructure sures, right? Affordable housing, public transportation, our roads and bridges, right? So that we have a community, right? And I say roads and bridges very deliberately, because that generates jobs for the working class. High wage jobs for the working class, for people that look like me and you. And that's how we are going to, you know, provide those boots, right? So that we can see, you know, providing that those home ownership opportunities, right? So that we have more people investing in homes, like I said, and getting those educations, so that businesses and high wage jobs want to invest in Arizona, want to invest in Maricopa County, like the tech corridor in my district, right? GoDaddy, Honeywell, PayPal, Intel, Microchip, all have headquarters, State Farm, Target, right? I can keep going on in my district, in my district. What can we be doing now to facilitate those partnerships with our elementary schools and our middle schools? So we have those pipeline opportunities, so that those jobs and those education enrichment opportunities are there and are presented, you know, for our most vulnerable populations. That's the vision I see, right? Because when you invest in our people, right, when you invest in your communities, when you invest in your public spaces and public opportunities, your economy thrives, you know? And it all comes together.
Wow. I've felt like it was almost, you were channeling some Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in there for a second. I thought you were going to break into, I have a dream. I have a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I was like, it's about to pop in a second.
I'm going to say that for a little bit later.
That'll be your inauguration speech. You drop in and be like, I have a dream for Maricopa County that one day in this county, we will have jobs for every woman, child, man, and boy that wants to be able to work in Intel, in Honeywell, at Microchip, and State Farm. So we're going to close this out, unless you want to keep on going, because I could talk all night.
I'm here as long as you are. People are going to get tired of listening to me. We got to give them a reason to come back.
Well, you know, this is one of them things where it's like, you are so tremendously energetic. You're going to be an amazing elected official, because I can already hear in the groundedness in your call to this work that it will almost be the throwback to how Lincoln's White House was, where folks would go to the White House looking for jobs and actual help. It was, government is there to provide that place where church used to, back when we had religions instead of governments, where that was that facilitation place for people to meet needs that they didn't know how to meet. And we have a situation where, because we are a largely secular society, the needs, the basic needs that people need to meet, food, clothing, shelter, water, purpose. And we now call purpose job. And so what we have is right now a mass shifting of jobs and the types of jobs that are available in the world. So people need to be retrained, and we need to build new pipelines for those things to happen. And so it's powerful and beautiful that you're coming in looking to that vision and seeing how you can actually build those partnerships at a school level so that those kids can be prepared for the jobs that will be here a decade from now, 2 decades from now.
Yep.
Because we're going to have a massive shift, especially as the internet rapidly replaces information jobs. Like lawyers are learning nowadays that the only thing they have left is procedure. Mm-hmm. Because you can look up the law on Google yourself, but you have to figure out what is the right time, the thing that you have to say to put in place to make the thing happen. But otherwise, it's like, I know what's legal and not because I can Google search it. I don't have to go to a book and find the car catalog.
You don't know not one person that owns an encyclopedia now.
Mm-mm. And that's how I grew up. I had like an incomplete set. That's what we had at our house.
We missed the WI through.
Oh, yeah. It was like A, B, and then D, G, F. We just like, okay, we're going to learn some stuff here today. It did, but, you know, the beautiful thing is it forced me to go to the library. And if you have the gift of reading and know how to find whatever you want, you can learn anything you want. And these kids don't know. Like these kids now that have all of this information at their fingertips, and some of them are spending their whole days like on Instagram and TikTok. I'm like, y'all just don't understand what we had to do in order to go and learn some stuff.
Imagine this. If there was a math problem associated with Fortnite to get into the lobby. You know what I mean? just imagine where we would be as a society. I'm right there with you, right? You know, to access the next TikTok video, you got to solve this riddle. Mm-hmm. You know, we would be in a complete, you know, and I love that you're talking about this because the brain itself is so powerful. Mm-hmm. It named itself and everything else around it, right? Think about that. The brain named itself and everything else around it. Mm-hmm. So we have that ability, that ingenuity, and that innovation to take ourselves to the next level. We just have to be willing to challenge ourselves. Like I often say this, right? That every time that we think that we've reached our capacity to meet a challenge, we will look up and be reminded that the capacity may well be limitless. Mm-hmm. And that's because we have ultimate capacity. You know, we're the elastic band that just keeps stretching. It doesn't pop back. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. Our inhibitors, like you said, right, is not being willing to run towards the fire, is not being willing to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, is not being willing to challenge yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we're at a great point, right, in history, like we were talking about a little bit earlier. We're at a great point in history where we will accomplish something great. We just need those leaders who are going to push our society in the right direction, who are going to be there to help lay those foundational building blocks, right, for, you know, us to stand upon. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, here we are. And you're talking about these building blocks that people can stand on and grow from. We haven't grappled with the fact that we're at a moment, thank you Facebook or unthank you Facebook, where literally we can communicate with every single human being on this planet. Our communication is 100%.
I'm gonna push back on you on that one, and here's the reason why. I have the fortune of working in communications by day, and I think that we have the ability to connect. We've lost the art of interpersonal communication, and I have this theory that I'm working. So you know, I'm gonna drop this on you. Ready for this? Mm-hmm. So it, you know, you want to co-author this book with me?
All right.
So here it is. Right now, in the workforce, in the voting force, right in life, we have 4 major generations that are interacting with each other. You have the boomers, you have the X, the millennials, and the Zers, right? That are all interacting with each other in the workforce. They're sitting side by side. They all think and process things very differently. Mm-hmm. And that art of critical thinking and processing has seemed to diminish. you look at grandma, right? Grandma is a boomer, right? And grandma mm-hmm. would write her best friend a letter, right? And that letter would take time. There's critical thinking, there's thought, there's process. And then you had to wait for it to be delivered and get it back, right? Mm-hmm. Grandma's daughter, the Xer, would take that same three-page letter and turn it into a three-paragraph email. Still a lot of thought process that goes into it, right? There's a lot of critical thinking that goes into it, but more instantaneous. You send the email, you get it back eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma, you know, the daughter's son, the millennial, has taken that same three-page letter, it's become a three-paragraph email, and it's not a three-line text message.
Mm-hmm.
That is heavily colloquialized, that takes zero critical thinking, that takes zero processing, and is instantaneous. And now that millennial's younger sibling, the Generation Z, has taken that same three-line text message and it's three emojis.
Mm-hmm.
And so we now have to figure out, as leaders, as communicators, how to communicate from a standpoint, right, that is that three-page letter and that three, you know, emoji text message mm-hmm. without alienating anybody. And mm-hmm. that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the core of what the future is going to look like. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're young. We're all young mm-hmm. here, right? You know, there's going to be four generations in the workforce for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be people working, you know, that are 60 right now that'll be working until their 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And so what are we going to do, right, as we prepare to move forward, right? And so that's going to be our book that we're working on together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Address the generational divide.
It's like, I'd imagine, I'd do a bit sometimes. Every once in a while, I'd fiddle around with being a comedian because that was what I did before I walked into Obama training of like having Dr. King come back to life. And then he has to figure out how to communicate on Twitter. And so how in the world this man who did a 30-minute speech at the Lincoln Memorial, how he would put "I have a dream" as a set of emojis, because that's what some people would, they were like,
yeah,
Doc, we need you. We need it shorter. We need we just need
140 characters, Doc, you know.
It's like, "I have a dream." It's like, no, that's too long. It's like, but that's where we are.
That's right.
And I think you hit it right on the head, that it's like so much context gets boiled out of it. That we're almost at this place of, you know, if you're going back to biblical terms, where we're almost at Babel, where we all speak the same language, but we all are, no one's understanding each other.
Yeah.
Because we're using the same words to mean completely different things.
Different things, yeah.
And there's so much misunderstanding and all mm-hmm. that other stuff there. Yeah, I would love to work on this book with you, because I could talk about, that's what I got my degree in, is communication studies. And this is like trying to bridge the gap of
mm-hmm.
not only the generational gap, but the flourishing, the dispersal of our entertainment mm-hmm. has made it so that there are very few common contextual conversational guides that people have.
Yeah.
And the one that we have right now is politics, and it's so angering and polarizing that people can't even come together around that unless they are in their own specific circles. Like the number one TV show in America, I would imagine it's only 1 in 100 actually watches it. So you would sit there, and even sports, it's like you have some people that are, we've gotten so to a place where we can't even just enjoy a sport. We have our team, and then we hate everybody else's team. Unless you play fantasy football, then it's like a whole other thing.
It's a whole other thing. That's right. You know, and so I think that is the perfect culminating point, you know, for us to, we can end on that, right? It's going to be the ultimate challenge mm-hmm. to every leader
mm-hmm.
is, what are we going to do to unify and not divide?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you can disagree with somebody. There's a fundamental difference between right and wrong,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we must stand up for what is right and be staunch defenders of what is right, mm-hmm. right? And eliminate what is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you can have different philosophies on engagement.
Mm-hmm.
You can have different ways of approaching a solution, And if you have somebody that comes from a different walk of life to you, and you disagree 99.9% of the time, but you have that 0.1% of something that you agree on, mm-hmm. that's your window of opportunity. That's how we're going to unite this country. That's how we're going to get back on track. It's going to be people being bold, because that's not going to be popular. It's going to be people being bold and willing. You know, compromise is not a dirty word.
Mm-hmm.
Being willing to put the people first. Because as an elected official, and I'll close here, but as an elected official, I'm not going to represent the 50% plus one that elected me. I'm going to represent every individual in my district. And I can tell you, I know for a fact, not everybody agrees with me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be my job to put them first, mm-hmm. no matter what.
I just got goosebumps all on my neck. I got goosebumps all on my neck. If I could fly down there and get registered to vote in Maricopa County, I would go and do that right now. Before you go, I'd love to do a vote plan with you so that
Let's
we can make sure that we have that. We'll post that up real quick. So first, your name.
I am Jevin D. Hodge.
All right. Jevin, will you be voting by mail or voting in person?
I will be voting by mail. Arizona, we're fortunate to have the permanent early voter system where I receive my ballot 30 days prior to the election.
Awesome. Are you registered to vote?
I am registered to vote.
Awesome. And what's the most important reason that you're voting this year?
Because our future depends on it. You know, this is the most important election, because every election is the most important election. This is a matter of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I was going to ask, have you filled out a vote by mail request form, but you guys are already permanent voter. You don't have to. Do you have a 55-cent postage stamp?
I do. I have several.
Dope. Wait, now in Arizona, are you required to put the stamp on there, or does it come with it?
So Arizona has one of the most comprehensive vote-by-mail systems where it is taken care of for you. All you have to do is fill out your ballot, sign it, seal it, and return it.
Oh, my God. That's so magical. And what is the date you're mailing your ballot?
I'm going to mail my ballot back the day after I receive it. So whenever it comes in the mail that first week of October, you best believe by the end of that week, it's going to be in the mailbox.
All right. So we're going to put on this thing by October 7th.
That's right.
It's going to be in there.
Deal.
And where is the mailbox or post office where you're dropping your ballot?
1 mile away from my house. We have a post office, a satellite office.
Awesome. And will you post a selfie at the mailbox and tag VotePlan 2020?
Definitely. Awesome. Definitely. Count on it.
Well, that is awesome. And this is the VotePlan. If you want to spread it out, I'll send it to you guys. Thank you, Jevin. It has been amazing having you on the pod. You have such great energy. I can't wait. There's going to be so many national platforms where you're going to speak, because you're going to lead a set of people. You're going to be the model for what younger people that need to be running for office around the country are going to be. Now, I would love to make sure that you guys get to JevinHodge.com and learn more about Jevin, so that you can see his bio, see any of his platforms, get his social media. And please, Jevin, let us know where everybody can get at you. So I'm gonna shut up and let you tell us where we're going.
I appreciate you. You know, JevinHodge.com is the central location. From there, all of my social media channels are linked to it. On Twitter, I'm at Jevin, J-E-V-I-N, 4-A-Z. On Instagram and Facebook, I am at Jevin Hodge. I engage and I follow back. So be sure to give me a like, a follow, and let's have a good conversation.
Oh, yeah. And I'm Marquise Olison. I'm hosting. You can catch us at VotePlan 2020 on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Or you can follow me at Marquise Olison on Instagram and at TheKeese on Twitter. This has been the VotePlan podcast today with special guest Jevin Hodge. It has been my pleasure 100%. Everybody, please remember to like and subscribe to keep getting this fantastic content. It is our mission here to make sure that every single American has a plan to vote on or before Election Day, because this year and every year, it's your life that's on the ballot. So you might as well participate. Thank you, guys. God bless. Wear a mask and wash your hands.